African Dialogue, looking at different events in depth, discussing a variety of issues.
What we see here is a clear violation of, one, the rights to privacy of Tiwonge and Stephen.
The position of Greenpeace is that it's been a disappointing meeting.
Let's zoom into today's subject matter. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa has announced the local government elections will take place on the 27th of October 2021. He made this announcement some 2 weeks ago, and this will be the sixth time under South Africa's democratic dispensation that voters will elect leadership and public representatives at metropolitan, district and local level. This was despite calls from the Economic Freedom Fighters and opposition party and some sections of Ramaphosa's own party, the African National Congress, for the municipal polls to be postponed. The president of South Africa, Ramaphosa, said that COVID-19 had changed the way of life across the world, so adjustments would have to be made as how elections are conducted. Elections are known for their long queues at voting stations, which, given the pandemic, could become a super spreader event. But let's look at the issue at hand here. Is South Africa ready in this short space of time to get things going? We know that South Africa has a good reputation when it comes to electioneering. We're joined on our program today by Grant Masterson, Program Manager at the African Peer Review Mechanism within the Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy, also known as EISA. We also have Dr. Ina Hose. I haven't spoken to her in a long time, so it's a pleasure to have her on our program, Senior Lecturer of Governance and Political Transformation within the Department of Politics at the University of the Free State. Professor Kealeboha Mapunye is also our guest. He's joining us from the University of South Africa. He works there as the Professor of African Politics. Thank you all for giving us your time. We really appreciate it. Grant, let me start the program with you in terms of, this has been a debate in South Africa before the announcement some weeks ago whether to have the elections this year or not. The local elections, are they important to postpone, or do you think this was a good call of by South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa?
Morning, Ben. Lovely to talk to you again. Thank you for that. I think that the whether or not the local government elections being held later on this year is a good idea is going to depend largely on South African citizens and how we behave with respect to the election. It seems to me a large amount of the concern around the existence of the coronavirus pandemic in this local government period is focusing on the campaigning itself. So that also puts a spotlight on the conduct and the behavior of political parties during campaigning and, of course, of their supporters. The ability to hold elections is now tried and tested under coronavirus conditions. So we've seen elections, national elections, in very large countries carried out across the world, some successfully, some less successfully. And the determining factor appears to, in all cases, have been how have the various stakeholders in that election behaved in respecting or disrespecting the protocols that keep us as citizens safe against coronavirus?
Let's contextualize that, because I think that's a very powerful position that you are putting into this discussion, Grant, in terms of the fact that we already have seen in various countries elections that have taken place under COVID-19 constraints. How have we went, especially in Africa? There have been a lot of concerns in terms of how elections were in various different countries. Do you think that this wasn't a context that we were supposed to take in hand before making this decision?
I can't speak to the factors that informed the president's decision to announce the election date, but I'm sure that based on the available evidence, if the decision had factored in previous experiences of elections during the coronavirus period, then I think then we have both good examples and bad examples of how to go about it. And so there were a couple of elections in West Africa last year, Sierra Leone being one of them, Cote d'Ivoire another, and the elections that were conducted there, I think, were were relatively good examples of how it's possible to hold an election and observe strict protocols to ensure that the transmission of the virus is maintained and contained. And then, of course, on the other side of the continent, we had the elections in Tanzania, where the late President Magufuli had simply denied the existence of the virus and invited people to just continue living their lives as normal. And that would be on the other end of the spectrum of managing an election with almost no regard for the safety protocols that are required under coronavirus conditions.
Mm. Let me bring you Dr. Ina Khoos. Thank you for giving us your time. What are your thoughts? Do you think that this is a year to actually take on the toll of this elections? The Independent Electoral Commission, which we approached and they couldn't certify an interview for us for this conversation, state that they are ready and they have the infrastructure to set up local elections for this year. Is that enough?
Good morning, Ben. Yes, I think, you know, as far as the IEC goes, they have conducted elections successfully, or largely successfully, many times now. We can safely say in South Africa we've had credible, free and fair elections. Our technology enhancements did bring some problems in the 2019 national elections, you know, with various instances where people could vote more than once and such, which I think will definitely get attention this time around. Generally, I think they are geared for elections. The issue now is being responsive and adaptable to the COVID situation. And that is, of course, you know, we hope that they have enough time. We trust that they do. They have, of course, discussed this with their presentation to the Portfolio Committee in Parliament with regard to the elections and if it's, you know, even if it's even possible to postpone or not. And they said it's, you know, constitutionally we have to have an election this year. And if that changes, it needs to be a constitutional change. The discussion needs to have, you know, if that is even on the cards. And, you know, the credibility of councillors comes into play when their term ends and it then gets postponed to, you know, further, to another the year even. That becomes a problem. And that's why there is 3 months, you know, between the 4th of August and I think the very early in November, where the election can take place, and we see that the president has made the date very late in October, I suppose, to get it as late as possible within the allotted, you know, time. So as far as the IEC goes, I think they would have, I think they would have said to the country and to Parliament, listen, we won't be ready, because they understand the importance of their role. And if they say they are and they have things in place, at this point, we have to trust them.
Well, let's look at it from a COVID-19 perspective, Dr. Ina Khoos, because COVID-19 has become a political issue, especially to the fact that South Africa has had a lot of setbacks in terms of procurement and distribution of vaccines. Does that complication of that setback of our vaccination program actually make things complicated on how we're going to manage these local elections?
Yes, and as my colleague just said, you know, our behavior is going to be paramount because the rules are going to be very clear, I'm sure, that we have to adhere to as voters coming to the, you know, the election booths. Standing in line, you know, any kind of campaigning that is allowed to take place. And with regard to political parties and us as voters and the public at large, our behavior is going to be paramount in this election and the way we conduct ourselves. And we hope that, you know, the current political climate does put up some red flags. We know in normal elections in the past, you know, disgruntled communities have, you know, burned down tents or disrupted elections because of in protest of service delivery. I do think we will still see that. You know, especially now we've we see that the ANC's, where they, you know, the government on local level especially, has been dismal, and many communities are suffering greatly with the lack and even complete, you know, failure of service delivery. So the anger is more than ever, I think, when it comes to that. And those are the kinds of things that we're going to have to manage very carefully running up to the election and on the day.
Professor Maponya, let me bring you in into this conversation. And I think it is a good point to speak around the issue of how campaigns take place in a South African context. They're very robust, especially because local elections sometimes set a trend for national elections. What is your take? Because I've seen a few ANC t-shirts now and then, individuals campaigning in some parts of Johannesburg, but it hasn't been as prominent and as diversified as seeing the campaign process as usual. What's your take?
Yes. Good morning, Benjamin, and good morning, fellow panelists. Thank you for inviting me. In my view, the issue of campaigning becomes one of the key issues that can make or unmake or undo an election, a successful election, so to say. Because, as you rightly point out, yes, I was also observing a few, you know, incidents of campaigning in and around Gauteng, you know, for the previous by-elections. And yes, it looks like mostly from the ANC side, even though I've seen a few, you know, the blue t-shirts from the DA and the other smaller parties here and there. My observation is that many of these, you know, campaigns are still rooted in the old-fashioned way, you know, of getting people together in a group. And, of course, they go to the third, the well-tried and tested strategy of the parties of door-to-door campaigning still also comes in. So I don't know what the parties are going to be doing differently this time around between now and the end of September, you know, because that's then when, you know, much of the campaigning will be happening, save for doing, you know, what they are used to doing best, which is, you know, these very traditional strategies. Do they have a choice? Unfortunately, they don't have a choice because, as you know, a sizable number of, you know, the you know, voting, especially, you know, in the poor urban and rural areas, you know, the majority black, you know, voters, they don't have access to, you know, these Wi-Fi, internet and so on, such that at least you could opt for an online version. Despite that, also the Electoral Commission strategy or rules and regulations do not allow for online voting, as we all know. It is also a constitutional matter. It actually depends on electoral amendment. The Electoral Act will have to be amended to allow, you know, this online voting, if ever it will happen. And in fact, it will be the Parliament will also have to speak to the IEC, the Electoral Commission, to find out as to what kind of electronic voting are they thinking about. Is it about electronic voting machines, EVMs, such as what is used in Namibia, or what? So the jury is still out there around alternative forms of campaigning. But to come to your point, I mean, to the question that you asked, I don't see them the campaigning, you know, the political party campaigning period becoming anything different. If anything, they are going to be forced to have to comply with, you know, PPE protocols, make sure that their supporters are complying. And my take is that some of them are not complying, the supporters, even the leaders of the political parties, because I've seen them, you know, moving around, some of them with masks covering only the mouth, which is very, very dangerous, as we all know. They are supposed to cover the mouth and the nose. And so are the supporters also doing the same thing. In addition, I've become unpopular for raising the fact that if you tell people that they must sneeze onto the elbow and they must cough onto the elbow when they are sneezing, presumably they've got COVID. Why should I, as Mapunye, be asked to do elbow greeting with Benjamin using the very same elbow? You see?
You're opening a new can of worms, Prof.
I am opening a can of worms, absolutely, Benjamin, because this is about the life of the voters out there. Mm. You see? If they're going to be moving around doing all these elbow greetings with this the saga that is unfolding in India, I don't know what's going to happen in South Africa. We might be having, you mentioned super spreader event when you opened. We might be having a super spreader event, in the making or in the waiting.
Mm. Well, let me take a quick break. Very relevant points brought in by all our guests today. As you heard there from Professor Mapunye, that the complication is a behavior, as has been asserted by both Dr. Inahos and Grant Masterson, but also the technologies that will have to be utilized. Has that been dealt with under the COVID-19 environment? Which also is interesting is the campaigning seasons that will actually unfold and pick up as time comes closer to the voting day. But there's also other issues for us to touch on. We'll do that after our break, especially around the fact that some opposition parties were against holding these elections this year, but as Dr. Inahos and Professor Mapunye highlighted, that this was a constitutional matter. It wasn't just a simple matter of saying, oh, let's postpone it for next year. You would have to create some constitutional amendments for us to postpone the elections for next year. We'll deal with some of these other factors after the break.
This is Channel Africa, South Africa's official international public radio station on internet and satellite, from an African perspective.
Guess what? You can now listen to Channel Africa using Silozi, Chinyanja, Kiswahili, Portuguese, French, and English, giving you an African perspective.
Hi, my name is Tandolunye Ndlovu, and you are listening to Channel Africa.
We love Channel Africa from an African perspective.
Channel Africa, bringing you the African perspective.
Channel Africa, bringing you the African perspective on the coronavirus. Coronavirus is a disease that causes respiratory illness like the flu with symptoms such as a cough, fever, and in more severe cases, difficulty breathing. You can protect yourself by washing your hands frequently, avoiding touching your face, and avoiding close contact 1 meter or 3 feet with people who are unwell. If you suspect to have contracted COVID-19, contact the relevant health authorities in your area. Keep listening to Channel Africa. The African perspective will keep you updated on the latest on the coronavirus.
Well, today on the show, we unpack the readiness of South Africa to hold the local elections in a few months under the COVID-19 environment. Just a few weeks ago, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa announced that the local government elections will take place on the 27th of October 2021. Already, you're hearing a lot of issues around protocol, issues around behavior, issues around which mechanisms will be utilized for campaigning, and also the election process itself. Joining us today is Grant Masterson, Program Manager, the African Peer Review Mechanism within the Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy. Also, Dr. Inahos is with us. She is associated with the University of Free States Department of Politics and an expert in governance and political transformation. Professor of African Politics at the University of South Africa is joining us. Professor Kealeboha Maponyen highlighted a very interesting issue around mechanisms and technologies that can be utilized. I think that's such an important element that I didn't even think of before the program. But Grant, let me come back to you just to give me your insight, what you think about the issue of campaigning during this process. Yes, we're seeing it happening sporadically right now. Do you think the pace of it and the measure of it will increase in time?
Yeah, we will typically see a build-up towards the election date. I think probably about two to 3 weeks before the the 27th of October is most likely when we'll hit a peak. You know, local government elections have progressively gotten more competitive in South Africa over the years. And the sense is that this is just going to continue the trend that a large number of the frustrations that voters experience are almost reflected more significantly at the local government level when elections take place for local government elections. So, yeah, I think we can expect to see a big increase in campaigning. The period just before 27 October is likely to see a kind of a peak. And the other challenge when it comes to almost policing or monitoring the conduct of campaigning is that, particularly for local government elections, campaigning tends to be quite dispersed because of the nature of the elections themselves. So in one way, that's a good thing because we don't anticipate quite so many big mass gatherings, although those are used typically as kind of the marquee events to really drum up excitement and certainly some media exposure by the parties. But in another sense, the conduct of the local structures of political parties is going to be tested here, because compliance is really going to be one of those tests that that trickles down to the structures of the parties. And you know, particularly for parties that don't have strong structures in all areas, then the challenge really becomes how does the party leadership encourage its members when campaigning to ensure that they observe the necessary protocols that will protect both themselves and their voters and citizens in general. You know, Prof. Mponya made a very important point about what is going on in India right now, and it's difficult to ascribe any one cause to what's been going on in India, but certainly from the analysis I'm reading, it seems as though citizens kind of stopped taking the virus seriously. They relaxed. And they got a little bit careless in how they were moving about, the precautions that they were taking. Mm-hmm. And in a period like this, when you have an election coming up, when the opportunity to meet in groups is elevated, we can't afford to relax our guard. We need to continue to be vigilant as citizens, as voters. We need to be responsible citizens and ensure that we don't become the super spreader event that Prof. Mponya was talking about.
Mm. And what's your take around the adjustment to the COVID-19 arena? I think also Professor Mponya was highlighting the technologies to be used. How do we link this to the campaigning process in itself? And even if we consider that mode of things, we still have to reach those who are far-flung in the rural areas, Sir Grant.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think when social media was new and exciting, and particularly Twitter and Facebook were these new platforms to publish information and certainly to share ideas and to share your campaign materials, people viewed social media as a disruptor, that it was going to empower small parties, that parties with low budgets and less of the big kind of corporate machinery behind them to be able to pump out advertising and get into the mainstream media. We're going to disrupt those channels through using social media. And actually, as time has gone on, what we have seen in the social media space is that the large parties tend to dominate in that social media space just as easily as they dominate in sort of the mainstream media and on billboards and other forms. So it's an interesting one in terms of how the smaller parties are going to address the challenge of campaigning. And, you know, also smaller parties typically have smaller budgets when it comes to campaigning. So things like PPE, they're an extra cost for their campaigners, the people who are hitting the streets and going out and visiting people. And to do online, I think Prof. Mponya made a very good point. The reach into the rural areas, particularly of online, is very limited. So, you know, it's going to be a big challenge, and I think that challenge is going to be more pronounced for the smaller parties than it will be for the bigger ones.
Mm. Dr. Inahos, do you want to touch on anything on campaigning, or do you want us to move swiftly along? Have we addressed all the factors?
Oh, I just want to add, you know, the idea that campaigning has been very specific in South Africa in the past, and the adjustments now that political parties need to make now might not be as easy for everybody. You know, big rallies and such, that can't happen. The cost, I think, is a very important issue. We have the Political Party Funding Act that now restricts some funding.
Mm.
And we know that parties like the ANC is already sort of broke. So the extra cost for getting people ready for with PPEs and such. And then a point maybe my colleagues can, if we have time, shed more light on this, is what I wondered about, is we are still, you know, as far as I know, under the umbrella of the Disaster Act.
Absolutely.
Which means there can be regulations probably pertaining specifically to the elections.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, and rules and regulations that must be followed, I'm sure that will happen. And then back to basics, I think, I don't know if you will see that, Benjamin, but I think radio will become central because of the issues Professor Maponya has highlighted to reach people. I'm foreseeing that as time goes on.
Mm. Professor Maponya, I think Dr. Inahos is supposed to be my co-presenter here, highlighting a very important point, the issue of the Disaster Act still in play, and the fact that, you know, it is controlled by a minority group in terms of decision-making that are being actually administered under COVID-19. And, you know, that particular council has been politicized very much so. And the opposition members have been speaking about how much the decision making has been based on a few number of people. What are your thoughts on that critical element? Because I think it's a big point that Dr. Inahos is bringing forth.
The issue around the regulation and election legislation is very, very critical. And this is where I normally would like to, you know, base my argument on, because at the end of the day, whether it is a political party, whether it is a voter, even the Electoral Commission itself, we have got to be regulated by, you know, the electoral legislation in place. So in my view is that, yes, we can, you know, entertain all these views and listen to what the parties are saying, criticize whatever they do. And in the end, we have to make sure that in order that we will come out in the end with a reputable, credible electoral outcome. You know, some use free and fair, of course, but we normally even go beyond that to look at the integrity of that electoral process. At the end of the day, Benjamin, in my view, is that we will be guided by the electoral legislation in force. It's not going to be easy because sometimes people choose not to comply with, you know, the rules and regulations or even the legislation in place, which makes things very, very difficult. So I'm not so sure where this answers your question, but I'm thinking, you know, about one of the parties which was very, very critical. This is the EFF, about you know, the election having to be held, but not you know, having recourse to the electoral legislation to say, okay, if you say we postpone, how do we deal with these, you know, entrenched, you know, clauses and provisions in the Electoral Act, in the, you know, Electoral Commission Act, which says you shall not postpone an election unless you have the following, you know. And, of course, unless this matter has been, you know, taken to the all-party caucus or maybe to Parliament, you know, for adjudication. So, that's my view.
And your thoughts on the COVID Command Council, do you think it would have an unfair overarching role, the fact that it's still going to be administering decisions in terms of that are most of them that have huge social and also political consequences?
We can certainly not preempt what's going to happen because the history of COVID, in my view, requires a daily vigilance and monitoring, which is what the Command Council is doing. And so this is now a situation where the intersection between electoral democracy or democratic participation meets, you know, medical science and, virology, whatever you can call it, whereby the experts on both sides have got to constantly work hand in glove and brief each other and brief the nation, you know, as to what is happening. We have that scenario in Durban whereby this ship has just, been discovered with people who are HIV positive from India. Mm-hmm. And we don't know so far what is happening. They're still making investigations to tell us whether we are going to have, instances of infection from that part of that continent or that country, India. Mm-hmm. But as we do that, I believe that the Joint Operations Council that is normally established just before an election takes place, of which the IEC is part, is best placed to advise the nation, the electorate, about day-to-day and weekly, happenings. Mm. Apart from that, in fact, earlier I wanted to say that when you mentioned that unfortunately we will not have the IEC as part of the panel, I was going to say it's a pity that we don't have the IEC because, as Dr. Hose mentioned, the IEC, keeps ticking the right boxes among election observers, international electoral observers, even among South Africans and even political parties in South Africa. Yeah. So therefore, it is a body that is known to be accountable, to be available when it is wanted in a panel discussion such as this one. So it's a pity that they are not available. But nevertheless, had they been available, they would have been able to give us, step-by-step a guideline as to what plans have been put in place. Are they talking to the command council, and to what extent are they doing that, including the most important thing, Benjamin, the procurement processes regarding the PPEs, because they're also very critical for the voters and their election officials as such.
Professor Maponye, let's ask Dr. Inahos the question that she asked us herself. What are your views on your own question, Dr. Hos?
I think I asked because I'm so unsure about this. We don't want undue influence from, certain groups or institutions on the elections. But we have, I think, very clear regulations needed, as far as I'm concerned, with regard to the elections. So the Command Council has a serious job to do. And then the voter education part of that is going to be essential. And I think, at the beginning of the pandemic, we know that, the government has done fairly well in educating people about the basics to do, wash your hands, wear your mask, social distancing and so forth. There was a campaign, I thought, at the beginning that did well for awareness and such. And I think that sort of approach will need to be followed. With regards to the normal voter education that needs to take place in how to cast your vote, also now how to conduct yourself in the midst of the pandemic. And I think I'm looking forward to see how that campaign is going to play out.
Grant, your thoughts around the parameters for the Command Council in terms of the interventions during the elections? I think it's such a marvelous question that Dr. Hose asked that I also have to position it to you.
It is a very interesting question. The state of disaster that we exist under right now does not allow the Council of Ministers who are part of that council to suspend the Constitution in any way. So we remain, as a country, guided and governed by the supremacy of the Constitution. Even the state of disaster itself is a provision of the Constitution. So at the basic level, all provisions of the Constitution remain in force. What the state of disaster does allow, however, is the temporary suspension and the limitation of certain rights that under other circumstances would just be taken for granted, such as freedom of association, freedom of assembly, which are the big ones for the coronavirus spreading. So these are things which have been limitations placed on those. I do think that there is some risk, and the Command Council needs to tread very carefully if they if they make any particular proclamations about the conduct of campaigning, etc., they will have to tread carefully. We've seen in other countries that under the guise of coronavirus protocols, there have been partisan politics played, and sort of restrictions and limitations placed on opposition parties that have not been applied to the incumbent party, and that creates the playing field where there is a palpable unfairness, which is not what you want to see in an election. So the Command Council does need to tread very carefully. I'm encouraged by the evidence that I have that the IEC has been in consultation with Parliament and that there has been consultation with the Command Council from the IEC. And ultimately, we have a fantastic institution in the IEC that remains consistently guided by the Constitution itself. They are extremely consistent when asked some tough questions by parties, by journalists, by ourselves. They are always referencing back to what guides their decision-making, what informs their thinking, and it's always the Constitution. So from that perspective, I am assured that the IEC will apply their minds to what does the Constitution say. And I think that as far as the Command Council goes, then as long as they're taking the right consultation, I trust they will do the same.
And your thoughts, Grant, on another factor that Ina highlighted was this was going to be also one of the first elections after the enactment of the Party Funding Act. How do you think that's going to change things? I mean, in 30 seconds, if you can give me a brief response to that.
I think whenever we speak, I've been very consistent on the matter that the Party Funding Act has been a good thing. It's a tough ask for the IEC to administer. And I think we're also forgetting that the local government elections here are also going to be touching on the voter's role. Has the IEC managed to get the specific addresses of every voter on the voter's role? There are a lot of complexities that the IEC is dealing with for this election. So it's encouraging to hear that they say that they are ready. And certainly the IEC needs the support of the parties, of the media, and of the voters themselves to really make sure that this very important aspect of our democracy can be conducted in a way that leaves us stronger, not weaker, not sicker, and not divided.
Professor Maponye, your final sentiments, just in 15 seconds.
My final sentiment is that the voter turnout might be affected by any drastic measures that might be taken in the run-up to the election that will make it very difficult for the parties to campaign, but that the IEC Civic and Democracy Education Program might just salvage, what needs to happen in terms of informing the citizenry. And finally, the procurement process of the IEC, I hope that is going to be in order to ensure that they procure enough masks as well as sufficient quantities of sanitation. Otherwise, we'll be heading into a disaster.
Dr. Inahos, your final say as we wrap it up?
Yes, we are finding ourselves in an unprecedented situation. Although there are examples all over the world, I think we've always had a very unique situation in South Africa, and I hope that we come out on top in terms of the credibility of our elections once again. For voters and all parties to check their behavior accordingly, and real strong ethical leadership once again will stand at the center of it.
Talk about ethical leadership, and before that, Professor Maponye speaking about procurement of these PPEs, we know that is another issue that's going to be zoomed into. I'm sure people will want to know how that procurement process will take place. But thank you to our guests. Thank you to Dr. Ina Hose, a senior lecturer in governance and political transformation within the Department of Politics at the University of the Free State. Thank you as well to Professor Kealeboha Maponye, who is a University of South Africa's professor of African politics. Last but not least, thanks to Grant Masterson, Program Manager of the African Peer Review Mechanism at the Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy. At some stage, Grant, we need to revisit what's happening in light of the African Peer Review Mechanism. It seems like things have stalled there, or have they accelerated? Maybe that's something that we can look at for another program. But thank you to all our guests for joining us on our program and giving us their insights on this topic. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Ben.
African Dialogue, looking at different events in depth, discussing a variety of issues.
What we see here is a clear violation of, one, the rights to privacy of Tiwonge and Stephen.
The position of Greenpeace is that it's been a disappointing meeting.